that running a veterinary business can sometimes feel like you're fighting your way through a jungle of financial insecurity, HR nightmares, and overall business confusion. Our goal is to give you the ideas and tools you need to not just survive in this jungle, but to thrive in the veterinary industry. By combining over 50 years of knowledge and experience with differing opinions and a little humor, we will help you get the information you need to make the best decisions for you and your veterinary business. Welcome to the Veterinary Survival Show with veterinary CPA and certified financial planner Mark McGaughan and certified veterinary practice manager and practice owner Jenny George.
Welcome to the Veterinary Survival Show. This is Mark McGaughan, CPA to the stars of veterinary medicine. Jenny George, my co-host, is enjoying a well-deserved vacation at Disney, so you're not going to hear from her. My guest today is Colin Carr from Carr Healthcare Realty. He is the preeminent advisor and consultant to veterinarians looking to acquire and lease veterinary real estate for their practice. Colin, welcome to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me.
We talk about real estate with our clients all the time, and usually it's, hey, I contacted this landlord and he wants this for the property, and what do I do? And we have to walk them through a whole litany of questions about their goals and desires and dreams for their practice. But Colin, what do you do when somebody contacts you, which we steer people to Carr all the time because they're specialists, just like we're specialists in veterinary tax and accounting and consulting. Colin's firm is nationwide and they have agents all over the country that are just ready to consult with you, not just sell you something or advise you. They're going to consult with you.
That's the exact word that I would use. We would consult with them. We'd ask them a lot of questions. What are you trying to accomplish? Where are you currently located? Where do you see your trajectory moving the next 5, 10, 15 years? And we go through a whole list of requirements. Once we pin down those requirements, we start our due diligence. And one of our top priorities is we want to uncover every viable option. We really encourage healthcare providers, especially veterinarians, don't fall in love with one property. It's easy just to go drive around, find your first property or find a property and say, that's the one, but that's not going to give us a real market comparison. That's not going to give us the ability to really leverage one property against another property. And at the end of the day, there's no benchmark for measuring your deal against another deal if you're only looking at one option. So we love to look at multiple properties. We'll look at, are there existing buildings for sale? Is it just land options where we have to develop a property? Are we looking or considering anything to lease as well? If so, we have lease versus purchase comparisons. But you could sum it up by saying it's really important to do your due diligence and your homework and to understand the market before you jump in.
So right now, I think people think there's a plethora of available opportunities where they're going to get a bargain basement deal on real estate. Is that actually true in this given market?
Not right now. It's not, unfortunately. I can tell you that in a lot of markets, it's a little softer today than when it was pre-COVID. So there is some relief, which is great. However, it's still a very tight market. You can see that on the residential front. You can see it with new home construction. If you've got new home construction with homes being built at an unprecedented rate across the country, which they are, and you've got other indicators in the market, there's not enough things that have happened in the economy to create a really substantial discount in the commercial real estate market. Commercial real estate market always trails residential. And so you're watching the single family market, the multifamily market. Those are still as strong as they've ever been despite the challenges we've been through. And so, yeah, unfortunately right now, it's still a pretty tight market in the commercial space. There's some silver linings there with interest rates being at all-time lows and some other things that are out there, but it's still a pretty tight market.
Is the strength of the market more urban, suburban? Is it just generally speaking across the country tight?
Well, I would say this. When you've got more options available for land, when you got vacant land that's available, that's going to put the doctor or the health provider in a little bit better space. Anytime you've got options where you can go buy a piece of ground and build your own building, that's going to loosen the market a little bit for you. If you're in a metro area where there's no options for you to buy ground, that's going to create a very minimal amount of inventory until more properties come available. And so that's the give and take. If you've got land available where you could purchase and build your own building, that's going to give you a lot more flexibility than if you don't.
When doctors are looking for a practice location, how far in advance of when they open should they start looking? Usually we tell people, get a lawyer, get a CPA, get a practice management consultant if you think you need one. Then do they just jump on the real estate train because they have to find that property first?
I would agree with you. I mean, you've got to have a really good real estate attorney. You've got to have a really good CPA who specializes and understands your industry. You've got to get a lender because you need to understand how much you're approved for. Are you approved to lease only? Are you approved to purchase? If so, how much money do you need to inject into the transaction, or is it 100% financing? Those are all variables that you want to get figured out ahead of time, because you don't want to go to the market and look at properties that you can't afford or that are not going to work. And then you want to get a really good commercial real estate agent that specializes in veterinary or healthcare that understands your industry. All those are really important, and that's going to determine and dictate what type of transaction you can do. As far as the time frame to start it, if you want to buy a building, you want to start as soon as you're ready. If you want to do a startup and lease a space, it's as soon as you're ready. If you're currently in a location and you want to relocate and you want to build your own building, that's an 18 to 24 month process. And a lot of people wait until their lease is 6 to 12 months up, and then they go to market and try to figure out a way to buy a piece of ground and build their own building, or buy a building and do a large renovation, and they run out of clock. They run out of time. So if you're going to do anything with raw land or ground and build your own building, you need to start that process at least 18 to 24 months in advance. Otherwise, you're going to end up in a holdover situation where your lease is expiring. You don't want to renew it because you're trying to get out of there, but your new building is not ready. So immediately, if you're going to lease, immediately, if you're going to buy a building. But if you want land or your own new development, that's an 18 to 24 month process.
I mean, we've had clients that were building a building, came up to the wire, their lease expired, and they had a tenuous relationship with their landlord, and they had to rent month to month, and they were always scared that the landlord was going to close the doors on them.
Yeah, you don't want to end up in a holdover situation or month-to-month lease with most landlords, because they don't have an incentive really to treat you that well, because you've already told them you're not going to stay. You're not willing to sign a long-term lease. They're trying to move forward with the next long-term tenant. And if they find that tenant before you're ready to get out, that landlord's going to do what's best for them. They're going to say, listen, I appreciate the fact you've been here for 10 years or 15 years, but our relationship is expired, and you're preventing me from doing my next transaction. You're making it more difficult. So you're not going to get landlords that are going to treat you very favorably in that scenario.
And there's a lot of startups now, a ton of startups, because doctors are leaving corporate medicine. It's not for them. They're on the search for real estate. Some are, I'm not saying brainwashed, but everybody says, I want to own my own building. Is that necessarily the best strategy? And what is the tipping point where they should consider lease versus buy?
If you can own your own property and the economics make sense and it's the right location for you, I'm a huge fan of ownership for a number of reasons. If you're doing a startup, however, you should look at leasing, in my personal opinion. It doesn't mean you have to lease, but in a lease scenario, there's a lot of incentives that are offered to you in exchange for you to be a tenant for the next 5, 7, or 10 years. For instance, the landlord's not going to make you pay rent during the build-out. So you're going to get a free build-out period of 5, 6, 7 months where you're not cutting checks every month when you're not even open. It's also very common to capture free rent allowances once your space is finished and you get moved in, and that's to help offset some of the startup expenses. So it's not uncommon to get another 2, 3, or 4 months of free rent up front. On top of that, most landlords in the majority of markets will pay what's called a tenant improvement allowance or a renovation allowance, where they'll give you a set amount of money to help get that space into the condition that you need it to be. They'll invest into the space in exchange for you to do a 5, 7, or 10 year deal. Typically, it's a 7 or 10 year deal on new deals. And so that might be $100,000, $200,000 less money you're borrowing from a lender and paying interest on. And so if you add up the cost of, you know, the free build-out period, the free rent once you move in, the fact that they're going to pay for a healthy amount of your build-out, you're not going to pay interest on that, and there's other concessions that are afforded to you, it's not uncommon to have that equal a couple $100,000 or enough money where it makes sense for you to ease into the practice that way, and you can become profitable faster, which means you can scale faster. You can invest in more staff, higher forms of equipment or technology, and you can get a more successful, more profitable practice sooner, which puts you in a stronger position to own when the time's right. And it also affords you the ability to not take down a 10,000 foot facility from day one. It's maybe we ease into a 2,500 or 3,000 square foot facility. You occupy that for 7 or 10 years. Your practice is very profitable. You're in a strong place financially. And then you go and build your own building, and that becomes your resting place for the next 20 years. It's a great way to look at it as well.
I mean, our mantra is make money as soon as possible. And if it's going to be a 24-month window to get through zoning boards of appeal to get your building up, why not start earning money for 2 years?
Absolutely. I think sometimes people, they look at the economics of owning real estate and they're very advantageous and favorable, but real estate is still secondary to the fact that you're a veterinarian and your practice should be profitable as fast as possible, like you just said. and that is your primary focus. If real estate becomes your primary focus to the detriment of your practice, you've got it backwards. You want to find a win-win scenario. Oftentimes, leasing is a great way to get off the ground or to start your own practice. And then other times, there's certain markets where there are no options to own. Depending on the area you're in certain cities, certain metro areas, you don't have an option to own. And so you got to find the best lease option then, and that's a whole nother evaluation.
So you started mentioning dealing. Who deals with the landlord? I have clients that go off on their own, and I'm not sure that they get the best deal. Carr is doing this on a daily basis on behalf of their veterinary clients.
Yeah, the do-it-yourself approach that I'm going to call the landlord myself, to me, that's equivalent of saying, I'm going to review my own legal contracts or I'm going to do my own taxes. To me, I mean, it's a really, really foolish approach for a lot of reasons, especially if you're in a space and you start calling a landlord on a lease renewal, they know that you're not out in the market looking at other options, at least not with a sophisticated approach. If you're unrepresented, they know that you don't have a strategy. They know that you don't have a game plan. And so they're going to bet on the idea that you're not willing to move. If a landlord thinks you're not willing to move or that you don't have a sophisticated strategy to look at multiple properties and really capitalize, they're not going to give you the best terms. This would be no different than if someone showed up to your house and said, I want to buy your house. It's the only house for sale. What's the best deal you're going to give me? You've already shown them your cards in that scenario. And landlords are going to bank on unrepresented tenants not knowing better, on the idea that they're going to pay more, and just the whole idea that they're just not sophisticated. And you look at a lot of larger companies, any Fortune 500 company or large national retailers or office users, they have a very specific strategy in every transaction. They hire professionals either internally that are on staff, they pay them large salaries to make sure that their real estate's handled at the highest level, or they hire brokers outside of them because they know there's too much on the line. And so if a Charles Schwab's going to market, or if a Bank of America or a Lockheed Martin, if these guys are going to do a deal, or a Chipotle or a Starbucks on the retail side, they have a very specific strategy in every transaction. They've got expert advisors handling every aspect of it, and they're not playing games. So when landlords see those people come to them and they experience that type of negotiation and that type of posture, and then they compare that to a doctor calling a landlord saying, you know, what's the lease rate or what would you do for me if I wanted to buy the property? It's so far removed from what these guys are used to seeing that they know for a fact this doctor has no clue what they're doing. Even a savvy doctor who's more business-minded, they still don't have the same strategy. The landlords know it, and they're going to take advantage of it.
I experienced that myself when I leased a building right outside Boston for 10 years. There was a whole department just dedicated to screwing me.
It's really common. I mean, we get brought in all the time where doctors didn't know about us, or they didn't know that they could have representation. But that's very common. Landlords will say, well, you can't have a broker. It's a total lie. You can 100% have a broker. It's like saying you can't have an attorney or CPA. But doctors don't know that there's a service like ours available, or the landlord says you can't talk to a broker, you have to work with us directly. And they're ignorant enough to believe that. But we get brought in, and then eventually they find out about us, or we look at their lease, and we'll ask them, do you think you have a good lease right now? Or do you think you're paying a pretty market rate? And they'll say, I think it's pretty decent. And then we'll show them the market, or we'll do a lease comparison, or show them what we've achieved for other clients in the vicinity, and start looking at it. And it's very common to say, you know, you've overpaid by $100,000, $200,000 over the last 10 years. Or you missed out on $100,000 in concessions with lower annual increases, a build-out or renovation allowance you didn't capture, the interest you've been paying on higher loans because you didn't get this concession. And you show them the amount of money, and it's astonishing. I mean, no one's going out there trying to lose $100,000, $200,000. But if your approach is, I'm just going to call the landlord and ask what they do for me, or try to figure it out, or drive around and call on properties, you might as well just scratch a $100,000 check or more and give it away, because that's what's going to happen.
So you're trying to find the advantage for your client against the landlord. And how do people enter into a relationship with you to do that?
Well, it's really easy to enter into a relationship with us. It's no different than residential real estate. If you're the tenant or buyer, you hire an agent, they have a fiduciary and an obligation to protect your interests solely. They're exclusively representing you, not the landlord or seller. And in commercial real estate, commissions are always paid by the landlord or seller, just like in residential real estate. If you're a buyer in residential real estate, you don't pay a commission to your agent. The listing agent splits the commission with you. It comes out of the seller's proceeds. It's the same thing in commercial real estate. Whether it's a lease or whether it's a purchase, the landlord or seller has a predetermined amount of money set aside for every transaction. And if the buyer or tenant shows up without an agent, the listing agent gets a double commission, or the landlord just keeps that money. So there's no benefit for someone taking the do-it-yourself approach. You're not going to save money. They're not going to discount that commission to you. That's against the law in the vast majority of states. And it's not a for sale by owner where you determine the commissions. A lot of times people say, well, if I don't hire an agent, I'll just save money. You're not determining the commissions. You have nothing to do with that. They're predetermined before you even showed up. So for us, it's simple. We meet with clients or prospective clients. We talk about what they're trying to accomplish. We let them know our experience and credibility. We give them our game plan and strategy. And if they're interested, we give them the state issued disclosure. We give them a very simple agency agreement. And it says three things. We're going to work exclusively for you. We're going to be paid by the landlord or seller as part of the transaction. And the third part, which I love, which is unique to CAR, most other companies don't do this, but we do it. And we tell them, if we don't perform to your standard throughout every aspect of this deal, you can terminate at any time. We're not going to lock you into an agreement. There's too much on the line for you as a healthcare provider or a veterinarian with your real estate. If we don't perform to your standards, just let us know and we'll call it a day. So it's very easy. It's, you commit to us and we commit to you. But if it's not going the way you want, you just say the word and we're out. But the reality is that doesn't happen because we perform at a high standard and a high level.
So we refer to CAR regularly because we're not experts. Does CAR have an edge over traditional commercial real estate brokers that are out there in the market, say in the Boston area or in New York City? Do they have an edge and inside knowledge, or are they just buyer fiduciaries and they're working for you?
We have a couple of advantages over the vast majority of companies that are out there. Number one, we don't do any landlord or seller work. So we never have a conflict of interest where we're taking a client to the market and then we're showing them properties where we also work for the landlord or seller. That's how most real estate agents work. They're generalists. They do landlord work, seller work, buyer, tenant, and they find themselves in conflicts all the time. We only work on behalf of the buyer tenant in every transaction. So that's a unique differentiator. Less than a fraction of 1% of all commercial real estate agents have that distinction. The next thing we do is we only do healthcare. It's our entire world. So we understand not only the real estate side, we understand the actual practice side as well. We understand the design of veterinary hospitals. We understand the equipment they put in there. We understand the concepts of, are you boarding? Are you not boarding? We understand all the details of the actual practice in the business, which gives us a difference. Like, we understand the soundproofing, the noise mitigation, the sound mitigation, the smell mitigation, the relief area outside, the back door. Why does the exam room have a door in front and then a door in back? Because you're not going to bring the animal back into the waiting room after you got them calmed down. You want to take them in the back once you calm them down. So all the little details of veterinary medicine, that's our world and we specialize in it. And so we do believe we can provide a much higher service because we also understand the equipment suppliers, the merchandise reps, all the different people that have to be involved in the transaction. We work with them on a daily basis. And so we do believe that we're more equipped and better suited to help the veterinarian than any other broker in the country.
Awesome. My biggest question all the time is, should I get more space than I really need when I'm starting up? I probably get that 2 or 3 times a week.
That is a very good question, and it's a very challenging question to answer. The answer we give, it doesn't usually solve their issue. We tell them, listen, we need enough space for you to expand into so that we're not locked into a space that's going to really stunt your growth or stunt your revenue, but we can't have a space that's so large that you're not going to use it for 5 or 7 years. So we've got to figure out, what do you need right now? What are you going to need in 2 or 3 years? What are you going to need in 5 years? And then we need to try to find a balance of that, because we don't want you paying on space that you're not going to use for 7 years. That's a tremendous amount of money you're going to lose. But at the same standpoint, we can't get you just what you need now, because if you get to the place where you are completely stunted in your growth because you can't do more besides work later hours or work more days, that's a challenging place to be as well, because the rent you would have paid for a year or two is going to be offset quickly by the lost revenue. So it's a balancing act of, what do you need now? What are you going to need in a few years? And then we need to give you a little bit more space than you're going to need immediately, but we can't go too large. You're going to lose a ton of money.
We have a lot of clients that have capacity problems where they said, oh, I wish I had more space because I could see so many more patients, but I can't hire a doctor to fill it. So
yeah, I mean, in commercial real estate, it's not like residential. I mean, residential, you have the same problem. You're single, so you get an apartment, and then you get married and you get a little bit larger apartment or a small home. And then you have kids and you just keep upgrading and get larger and you can move anytime you want to. Commercial real estate, you can't do that. You get locked into leases that are 7, 10 years long, or you buy a building and you can't just flip a veterinary building to the next person who walks by. It's really specialized. If you're building your own building, it's a lot easier to build additional space and maybe not finish it out. Maybe you build a larger building and then you only finish a portion of it, and then you have the ability to just knock down a wall and expand into more space. That's a great way to do it if you're building your own property. But if you're leasing, it's a balancing act. We need extra space more than you need now, with the goal we'd love to see you occupying a portion of it within 2-3 years, and then the majority of it by year 5. If we can do that, we're going to be in really good shape.
So we work with a Dunkin' Donuts franchise chain, and they're always on the hunt for real estate. Their whole goal is to get a corner lot with 2 curb cuts.
Yep.
That's what I hear about all the time. What are the 3 things that veterinary practice owners should look for in their real estate?
The location, the proximity is really important. If you're relocating, is the area you're in currently the best area? Is there another area that's up and coming where you could maintain and keep the majority of your patients, but then be exposed to a new segment of the market that you haven't been capitalizing on? So we're always looking at, if you have an existing location, do you want to stay immediately there as close as possible? Or could we move you a little bit, maybe 1 mile or 2 miles away, to where you keep the vast majority of your patients or all of them, but all of a sudden you have a chance to market to a new area that you weren't previously? That's a great strategy. So location, proximity, that's great. Access is obviously very, very important. It's one thing to be seen, but not be able to be easily accessed. You see that all the time. You can see them from the expressway, but to get to their property, you have to exit the exit you already missed and then go back. And then you got to turn left 7 times, turn right. It's tough to find them. You see them, but you can't actually get there. So access is important. Parking's important. Again, having a relief area, neighboring tenants, that's really important too. Who's going to be next door to you? What does that look like? Concepts like that, signage, visibility, exposure, all concepts we pay attention to. Our strategy is, let's go to the market. Let's have us uncover every property that's even remotely viable. And then we whittle it down to the top 6 or 7 properties, if there are that many. Sometimes there's only 2 or 3 or 1, depends on the market. But we want to go, is there 20 options? It gets whittled down to 6 or 7. And then we show them, and then we start negotiating on 3 or 4 of those properties simultaneously. And in that way, you're pitting the properties against each other. This one's got better exposure, but this is a much nicer property. This one's got great neighboring tenants, but it's too small. And so you're comparing the properties, and then it becomes really easy to start ranking them. Hey, this is my top option by far, or hey, these two are neck and neck. It's going to come down to the economics. And when you're doing that, the benefit of that for the doctor is they don't wonder, did they miss seeing the best property? They don't wonder, did they leave money on the table? They know for a fact, I didn't miss seeing the best property, and I didn't leave a dime on the table because I saw the top 7 or 8. I negotiated the top 3 or 4, and then I chose which one made the most sense. That peace of mind is priceless, especially thinking you're going to be there for the next 10 or 20 years.
So should people look at non-traditional spacing?
It depends on the market. I mean, we do non-traditional spacing. I mean, typically, when you're talking veterinarians, you're talking retail. You're not going to put an animal hospital in an office building. We have done it before in a metro area where we were able to put a veterinarian on the first floor of like an office building or a residential building, but it's more of a retail space still. But yeah, you're looking at a standalone building or retail typically. There's times where there's an industrial flex building. We've done that before. That's worked out well. And then we've repurposed some pretty random buildings for animal hospitals too. We've had former schools, we've had concepts like a former post office, stuff like that. If the building makes sense, we don't really care what was there previously. We just want to make sure that it makes sense for them moving forward.
I know there was a large Mexican restaurant in the seaport in Boston that only lasted 3 years because it just was off the strip. And now there's a large vet hospital in there. In a building with 17 floors with basically every other tenant having an animal, I think it's great capture for that whole area.
Yeah, we just did a large Mexican restaurant in Denver as well. And it's a great building. Strip it clean, gut it clean, and then take it from there.
So should people be looking for Mexican restaurants?
Yes, ask your server how the restaurant's doing financially and if they're intending to sell in the near future. Yep.
Actually, I'm looking at some literature, and it says that healthcare providers can increase their net worth by 7 figures through commercial real estate. Is that true in any environment, or is that true in our current environment?
I would say it's true in most environments. I would say there's definitely an exception to that. I mean, if you're in an extremely rural area and you could buy a building for $200,000 and it's never going to be worth more than $300,000 or $400,000, that's different. But in the majority of markets for an animal hospital, by the time you buy the real estate, whether it's a building or land and you build your own building, and then you finish it off for an animal hospital, the odds of that property costing you less than $1 million can be pretty rare in most markets. And yes, markets dip, but markets always come back up. I mean, you've seen the charts where it's a rolling mountain or a rolling hill where it goes up and down, but it always still trends up. Appreciation still trends up. Real estate's worth more today than it was worth 10 years ago, et cetera. So over time, real estate maintains its value. It appreciates. It allows you to capture significant tax deductions as the owner of that real estate. And every month you cut a check, you're paying down principal. So every month your net worth is increasing. If it's on your business, your balance sheet's going up and increasing in value. If it's your personal, your net worth's going up. And so it's very, very common to be a veterinarian and own real estate and have that building worth $1 million, $2 million, $3 million or more. And it's very common to sell the real estate for as much or more than you sell the practice for. And so if you have a chance to own real estate, traditional commercial real estate loan is a 20-year loan. That's the term. You can do 25 years with SBA or some products, but they don't do 30-year loans like they do in residential. It's a 20-year loan. That's the standard loan. Sometimes it's 15. So you get a 20-year loan, you pay down principal every month, you're getting huge tax deductions, and you probably pay it off a little early, pay it off 15, 17 years or whatever it is. And all of a sudden you've got an asset that you own personally or that you own with your partners that's worth $1 million, $2, $3 million. And all of a sudden you look down and say, look, my net worth is increased by seven figures because I bought my own property. And it's very common.
I knew that. I wanted you to confirm it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same reason people love to buy homes. You can typically rent an apartment for cheaper than a home or quite a bit cheaper. There's not usually a down payment on an apartment outside of a security deposit, but people want the home. They want the equity. They want the tax deductions and they want the control. They don't want to deal with landlords. Same thing in commercial. It's a great way to dramatically increase your net worth.
It's really using other people's money to fund your equity.
Absolutely. You look at interest rates right now. I mean, this is an unprecedented time. Residential interest rates. And I mean, you see stuff in the low twos, 2.1%, 2.3%. I mean, you do 30-year fix for high twos or low threes in residential, commercial. We're seeing stuff in the low threes, 20-year terms in the low threes, low fours. It doesn't matter at this point. I mean, it's unprecedented. And that money is so cheap. When you back out the tax deductions and you factor in the principal pay down, it's almost like they're paying you to take their money.
We typically engage a cost segregation company to do an engineering study to get upfront depreciation on most of these large building projects. But we also see it in smaller projects where the tax savings can be astronomical the first year.
Absolutely.
It's writing off income for either the first year or a number of years thereafter. So it does pay great dividends.
Well, that's the difference of you guys specializing too, because a lot of CPAs wouldn't understand that. They would just say, take the standard 39-year depreciation and they'd call it a day. But as you just mentioned, and as you guys are much more savvy than most CPAs, especially for veterinarians and healthcare, yeah, there's huge deductions that you can capitalize on because some of those improvements or a lot of those improvements don't have a 39-year life. You're putting money in these spaces and they might have a one-year shelf life or a three-year or five-year. And so capitalizing on those additional deductions is a game changer.
It makes us look like geniuses when we can say we're going to save you 20% of the building cost as an upfront deduction on a construction project for a standalone building, but could be even 100% of the build-out costs in a leasehold facility. So it's quite a surprise and it's a pleasant surprise for clients.
Absolutely. Those tax deductions are so needed, especially you get established, you get up and running, you start getting profitable, you start getting really profitable. You need deductions. You don't want to lose all of your money or a significant amount of your money to taxes. You want to find ways to capitalize and do it equitably and fairly. But there's some huge incentives out there to own real estate, and there's some huge deductions you could accomplish.
Love deductions. So what are the three things you think that tenants don't necessarily grab from their landlord in negotiations that they really need somebody to guide them through?
Well, if a tenant is doing their own negotiation, and I mentioned this earlier, the landlord is going to assume that they're not willing to relocate. If it's a lease renewal negotiation, they're going to assume that they're not going to relocate. If you were going to relocate, you'd have an expert agent. They would be the one calling the landlord, and they would already be talking about what they're getting at other properties. They would be leveraging other properties in the very first conversation. If the tenant calls the landlord directly, the landlord's going to assume they're not serious, they're not going anywhere, and I'm not going to give them hardly anything. I'll make them think that I'm going to give them a decent deal. I'll make them think that I'm stretching. The landlord's laughing all the way to the bank on those deals. So the do-it-yourself approach, that's a huge mistake. The next mistake I'd say is they don't have the ability to go to the market and really leverage landlords against each other. They're not market experts. And if you're not out there negotiating with three or four landlords, you don't have a benchmark. You're literally just guessing. It's like looking at a building that's a mile away and saying, hey, how tall is that building? Is it 50 feet or is it 150 feet? It's hard to tell when you're that far away. Well, if you walk up to it with a tape measure and you measure it exactly, you know what it is to the millimeter. I mean, you know exactly what it is. That's the difference. Is this a good deal from the landlord? You have no idea. You don't know what other landlords are willing to offer. And just calling and getting a brochure doesn't tell you the full picture. That's their asking rate. You might have been able to accomplish a deal that was $2 a foot less with lower increases, with a huge TI allowance, huge building allowance, tons of free rent. And those concessions could have added up to $100,000, $200,000 quickly. So how do you know if it's a good deal or not? If you don't have multiple properties you're negotiating with, you have no clue. So do-it-yourself approach is public enemy number one for healthcare providers. It's the number one way they lose money. The number two way they lose money is still in the do-it-yourself approach or even with another agent. If you're not negotiating with three or four landlords simultaneously, you don't have a good strategy. That's not how it's done. If you're Starbucks, they're looking for three or four properties every time and they know their options. That's a big one. Another one is landlords love to create enough conflict and confrontation with the doctor where they just eventually give up or they don't want to push them any further because they hate that conflict. Nobody gets in healthcare to be confrontational. You get in healthcare because you want to help people. You love animals. That's why you're doing it. Landlords love to put enough conflict and confrontation into the transaction to where the doctor says, you know what, let's just get this thing signed. I don't have the emotional bandwidth for this. And so that's another really common issue is they just say, hey, you know what, let's just call it a day, just sign the deal or tell them we'll do the deal. And they basically cave because they don't have a strategy and they're not supposed to be doing it themselves. It's not what they do. And I give you one more. A lot of times healthcare providers will talk to their colleagues or peers and they'll say, hey, what are you guys paying? Or what did you guys get for free rent? And then they tell them, and then the doctor compares what they're trying to accomplish with what the other person they know got. And again, that's a really bad scenario because you're comparing a poorly negotiated deal with what you're trying to accomplish. It's like saying, how do you get to Hawaii? Well, you know, you take a flight to Seattle and then to Los Angeles and then over to here and then you go to Honolulu and then you get into Maui. Like that's how I got there. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I'm looking at this flight. It's only got four connections. I think I'm going to do really good. It's like, no, there's a direct flight from your town right into Maui. Okay, that's how you want to get there. But oh, my friend took four connections, so this looks pretty decent to me. You're comparing a poorly negotiated deal to what you're trying to accomplish. That's a terrible benchmark. And so comparing your deal to your friend's deal when your friend got a really bad deal is not a good game plan. But a lot of healthcare providers, that becomes their benchmark.
It's kind of like doctors comparing how much they got for a refund on their tax return. Two totally different strategies, tax returns, income components, expense components, but not a great benchmark.
On depreciation, well, you know, my CPA did 39-year depreciation. I'm picking up $20,000 a year in depreciation. Mark got us a cost segregation study, and we picked up $250,000 our first year in depreciation, not 20. There's a big difference there.
Right, right. So can you tell me a little about Carr, how many people are in your company and where you're located across the U.S.? Is it just major metropolitan areas?
Yeah, we're across the country. We're in over 40 states now, and we are in major metropolitan areas, but we're also in other markets. I mean, if there's a population of 500,000 or more, we probably have a presence there or we do work there. We're scaling rapidly. We're going to finish this year just under 200 people in the company. And we represent thousands of providers. I mean, we're doing work right now for several thousand doctors across the country, coast to coast. And it's every type of transaction we've talked about. Lease renewals, startups, de novos, additional locations, purchases, land buildings, office condos, anything with commercial real estate we work on. And every one of our agents is trained to only represent healthcare tenants and buyers. They're trained in the specialties. They're trained with Carr's unique model of helping healthcare providers maximize their profitability through real estate. So we're all saying the same thing, speaking the same thing, doing the same thing. It's an anomaly in commercial real estate. Commercial real estate is the Wild West. Every broker runs around doing whatever they want to do. Most companies have no clue what their agents are doing. They just tell them, get out there and see if you can do something. And our strategy is just so different. It's laser focused. And it's predicated upon us delivering the highest results possible to the healthcare community. And that's how we grow our business.
Well, I was speaking out at Wheat Ridge Animal Hospital a few years back. And at that symposium, there was a Carr booth. And that's how I kind of got introduced to Carr. But everybody that came up to me, and there were a lot of people there in the Denver area, They all had the same message. It wasn't like some banks when I go to trade shows and eight different people will come up to me with eight different responses. It's nice to have a cohesive message where I know that somebody in Boston is going to have the same message in Miami or in Denver.
Yeah, we treat our company at the highest level. I mean, we're looking for a very specific message to every one of our clients. We're looking for the exact same experience for all of our clients, which is the highest level of communication, the highest level of integrity, a very detailed strategy for every client. And we grow our business just like veterinarians grow their business. If you take phenomenal care of the owners, of the pets, the patients, they're going to tell their friends and family. That's how you grow it. It's the same thing for us. We don't have a single sign in front of a building where someone can just randomly call and then they don't know if we're good or bad, but they have to work with us because we have the listing. We don't have any listings. Everything we do is word of mouth because we took care of the doctor at the highest level.
I just want to pick up on one idea that you mentioned, de novo practices. Is that a position of strength for an existing practice owner where now they're going to find a second or third or fourth location? Does that solidify their presentation with potential landlords?
It definitely helps bring credibility to the tenant when they've got multiple locations. A lot of times people ask us the question, should I do another location? And one of the questions that I ask them or we ask them is, are you maximizing your current location? How much more could you do out of your current location? Because reality is you can only be in one place at one time. If you get two locations, you've got two mortgages or two lease payments now. You've got to have two front desks. You've got to have two retail areas. You got to have two. I mean, you double everything and you can't be in more than one place at one time. So a lot of times people say, well, I want to have more locations. That's great, but I'd rather have one exceptional location than two average locations for a number of reasons. You'll be significantly more profitable with one really, really amazing location than two average ones. However, if you're getting to the place where, no, I have not maximized this yet, but I am going to maximize it within a very short period of time, whether it's a year, two or three, then absolutely, let's start looking at a second location. And then let's start talking about scalability. There's other questions that come into that, though. Do you want to do that? Are you willing to invest in that? Is that a desire that you have to scale and to train and to build people up? And do you want to do that? Some doctors, yes. Some doctors, no. What's the lifestyle? What's the work-life balance you're looking for? Those things all play into consideration. So de novos, multiple locations, we do a lot of those. We do a lot of work. We've got clients that have five locations, 10, 50. We have clients that have 500, literally across the country. It's really what's best for the client. And however we can support them and serve them, that's what we're going to do.
And I know the goal in dentistry is to have your own DSO with 5, 10, 15, 20 locations. And you see a lot of them. At least I see a lot of them more than what I see in veterinary medicine.
Yeah, I think it really just depends on what your strategy is. It's interesting when you look at scaling a business or scaling a practice, what's your goal? I mean, is your goal to build it up to where you can sell it and get a check and then figure out the next thing you want to do? We have a company that we've scaled that's highly profitable. People call us on a regular basis asking if we want to sell it. But the answer is always no, because we love what we do. We believe in what we do. And a big amount of money is not going to change our focus or change how we want to live our life or the impact and influence that we want to have on a daily basis. So I think it just depends. Every person needs to have an end game at some point, whether it's you're going to retire, you're going to transition out, you're going to still practice a few days a week because you love it. I think it really depends on what are you looking for in life? What are you looking for in your practice? And if the end goal is to scale and get a giant check from a DSO or a large group, then we can help you do that. If the end goal is I want to have the most profitable one location I can have, and I want to really make an impact on my community and I want to give back, then that's a different strategy. So whether it's one location or 50, each one has a unique strategy, and there's some great people like yourself, like us and others that will help you accomplish that.
Colin, I've learned a lot today. I hope our listeners have learned a lot. And to go to car.us for Colin's website can direct you to your area and who you should speak to. So you've been listening to the Veterinary Survival Show. Hopefully this talk today has made you thinking about being more successful in your negotiations on commercial real estate or acquisition and profitability. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your day.